Welcome, everybody. This is a meeting of the Funding Methodology Subcommittee. We are opening our open session here. The recording has begun, and I think we'll start here with Cottrell Woods. If you would please take roll for us this afternoon.
Yes, Judge Conklin. Ms. Fleming.
I am here.
Judge Kelly.
Present.
Judge Siebert. Judge Thompson. Mr. Finke.
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Harrigan.
Here.
Mr. Kim. Mr. Riley.
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi.
Here.
And Mr. Yamasaki.
Good afternoon, I'm here.
Thank you.
This is Judge Siebert. I think I was on mute when you called my name. I tried to hit the right button, but in case I wasn't on, I'm here.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you. As a reminder, this meeting is open to the public and is being recorded. Please remember to unmute yourself prior to speaking and state your name before you speak. Also, if you have questions, if you can use the raise hand button, but if I do miss you, please don't hesitate to insert yourself at a convenient time so we don't miss you. We're going to start with a motion to approve the minutes from the April 19th, 2022 virtual meeting, beginning at page 3 of the materials.
Yamasaki moves approval.
Thank you.
Okay. Riley seconds.
Let's see, I think I heard Judge Kelly and Judge Riley. So is that correct, Judge Kelly?
I think David Yamasaki made the motion, and I think Mr. Riley and I both seconded at the same time.
Okay, well, we're going to put you both down then. Thank you very much. All those in approving the motion to approve the minutes, say aye.
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 All opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, minutes are deemed approved. All right. Written public comments were not received for this meeting. This concludes the public comment portion of this meeting. Our item for today is 2022-23 Civil Assessment Allocation Methodology. This is an action item, and today's item is to deliberate and develop a new methodology for 2022-23 Civil Assessment Allocations. Oksana Tuck will start out by presenting this item. The report begins on page 6 of your materials. Oksana, are you out there and ready for us?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Ms. Fleming.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Oksana Tuck, Senior Analyst with Budget Services. This report is to assist the subcommittee in its discussion and development of a new methodology for civil assessment allocations effective July 1st, 2022, to be considered at the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee at its June 21st, 2022 meeting. Civil assessment revenues are retained by the trial courts that impose this fee after maintenance of effort, MOE in short, and or civil assessment obligations are met. The total MOE obligation amount of $48.3 million is deposited into the trial court trust fund and factored into the workload formula methodology for inclusion in base allocations to support trial court operations for all 58 courts. Back in 2017, during the funding methodology subcommittee's development of the workload formula methodology, a series of principles were developed, which are still in practice today and include the following. One, minimize volatility, maximize stability and predictability to the extent possible. Two, commitment to evaluating all submissions as submitted via the workload formula adjustment request process. Three, time for adjustment and adaptation. Four, responsiveness to local circumstances. Five, transparency and accountability. Six, independent authority of the trial courts. And seven, simplification of reporting while maintaining transparency. Several initial options presented for discussion and consideration on page 7 of the materials include allocating civil assessment funding via the workload formula, either utilizing the entire methodology or only using a portion of it, allocating civil assessment funding proportionally via workload formula need, allocating funding proportionally via workload formula allocation, or establishing another guiding factor for a proportional allocation. Other issues for consideration during today's deliberation include MOE and civil assessment obligations. That concludes our presentation, and we will turn it back to Ms. Fleming to guide the discussion.
Thank you, Oksana. This issue of civil assessments and how they are allocated is not a new issue. This is something that has been under discussion with the branch for some time. To begin our discussion, please keep available your funding principles on page 6 of Ms. Tuck's presentation materials. What we will do is we will refer to these principles, which are outlined, and provide context, and then we can look at the different components of the existing civil assessment allocations. While we do not yet know what the final amount of civil assessment backfill will be in the final budget, that issue is separate from the work of the subcommittee today. That is to develop a recommendation for a new methodology based on funding and allocation principles and not specifics. Whatever happens in the enacted budget would follow the final recommendation that will move from FMS through TICBAC, the Judicial Branch Budget Committee, and then to the Judicial Council at its July meeting. Civil assessment allocations currently include the $48.3 million maintenance of effort, or MOE, obligation that is currently funded by 38 courts but distributed out to all 58 courts via the workload formula methodology. Today, we will start with your ideas about using backfill funding to retain this $48.3 million as is in the workload formula, which could alleviate the 38 courts from paying this obligation. Pulling out the $48.3 million from the base and then reallocating it via a new methodology would have a much more significant impact to all of the courts rather than leaving this funding as part of the base allocations. After consideration of how to address the MOE requirement, we will then consider how to allocate the remaining dollars, which would represent the retained civil assessments. Items to consider here include how this should be allocated via workload formula, pro rata, not to exceed 100%, or something else. And next, in what order the allocation should fall as compared to other new funding. For instance, last in order, next to last in order, et cetera. And by definition, this item is going to the council as the last item to be distributed by the courts. Do we need to address this differently? You will likely have additional ideas and suggestions. And please note that with the development of a new allocation methodology for civil assessments, the retained civil assessment amount would be removed from the workload formula methodology calculation, which is located in the other local revenues column, and result in courts falling somewhere different in the relation to their workload formula need. This would also impact the current 22-23 allocations recently considered by the Judicial Branch Budget Committee with the updated calculations, including the civil assessment methodology going before the Council in July. Our task here today is to consider these and other factors and develop a recommendation for a new methodology for civil assessment allocations, which will be presented to TICBAC on June 21st. So I'll be happy to take any questions before we begin our discussion, or if you have any questions for Ms. Tuck. Okay, if you have your hand raised, I'm not seeing anything, so please shout out if you do have something. Mr. Taniguchi.
I had a question about the options. I'm not sure I think I understand, but if you can explain a little more. What's the difference between option B and option C?
Okay, option B being the allocate funding proportionately via workload formula need versus C, allocate funding proportionately via workload form or workload formula allocations. Ms. Tuck, would you like to describe the difference between these two, or Ms. Oliveira?
Hi, it's Brandy. I'll go ahead. So one of them, Neil, focusing on the need, will take a proportion of everyone's need and allocate a percentage accordingly. It would do the same thing on allocation, but the numbers would be different because there are some courts, let's say, that are receiving less funding in the workload formula model, and other courts could be receiving more. So in that instance, it's, how do I try to say this the right way? The workload formula need would allocate funding and bring people up proportionally at the same rate. If we focus on their allocation, because everyone has different funding levels compared to their need, some would get a bit more, some would get a bit less. Does that help?
So how is that different than the description under option A, which is, you know, how that policy is something that pertains to when there was new funding coming in and how we tried to allocate the new funding to equitably distribute between the underfunded and the overfunded courts?
And that's exactly it, Neil, is option A is more geared towards equity. We would first focus on those courts that are cluster one and make sure they're up to 100%. The next 50% would go to the courts that are the lowest funded. And then the remaining 50% would go to all courts unless you're already at 100%. You wouldn't get anything in that scenario. So it does gear more towards equity and bringing courts up to an equal funding level, whereas the proportional or pro rata approach would give everyone something depending on where they are on the scale.
Okay, so B, but B is different than A?
Yes.
Okay, and C is considered the pro rata approach then?
B and C would be, but they're looking at different starting points. Do we look at your need and bring you all up at the same rate, or do we look at your allocation and bring you all up a little bit differently?
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
Other questions?
This is Judge Siebert. I have my hand raised, but maybe it's not working.
Do you see it now, Judge? Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm new to this program, so some of these terminology is not 100% clear to me. So Paul, I apologize to everyone who already knows all this, and I'm the only dummy that doesn't, but what is the difference between workload formula and workload formula allocation?
So, Rebecca, what I'll do, this is Brandy, I'll try to pull up some information that went out previously to tick back to kind of show those figures, if I can have a moment.
Sure. And while she's doing that, if somebody could define what constitutes a cluster one court.
Fran, do you want to take that while Brandy's pulling up the...
Yeah, Rebecca, let me just pull my information for that.
If I may, while Fran's looking it up, just in short, Judge Siebert, that cluster ones are your, like, two judge courts. They're your smallest courts. The council made a commitment to ensure that they are fully funded, and so that 100% does apply to them. And then you get, so the clusters increase in number as the number of judgeships by court increases. So your cluster one courts are your largest courts, Orange, LA, Santa Clara, and then there's the smaller courts. I think, Neil, are you a cluster three court or in San Mateo? So it's just based on the size, but the cluster one courts are the smallest courts with the two judges.
Can I jump in on this one as well? I thought, Zaka, you made a good explanation. Judge Sieber, one of the realities that we assess as we were trying to evaluate a court's need is that in those two-judge courts, you oftentimes don't have, if it's just exclusively based on filings, it may not capture the infrastructure that a court needs to remain open. And so an assessment was made to determine all of these two-judge courts. What do you need? You need at least one courtroom clerk, let's say. You need folks to work in the IT department. And based on what was assessed at all of those different locations, a financial baseline was established so that those courts can have sufficient resources either by hiring regular employees or contracting services to provide some level of service. And because the dollar amount sometimes that the funding methodology said that they needed was considered to be sufficiently low, the standard was established to provide them a watermark so that they would be able to have sufficient resources irrespective of whether the filings went up or whether they went down. If they went up, of course, and the funding formula showed that they need substantially more workload, they would get the greater of the baseline or what the funding formula determined that they would need. So it's really to ensure that they can continue to remain open, have sufficient resources that may not otherwise be captured in the workload assessment that the formula was intended to try to determine.
Thank you. That's a great explanation. I actually now remember hearing some of this before, but that's a good refresher for me. Thank you.
And I believe Brandy is sending out some information on the breakouts on the calculations as well. Judge Sieber, do you have any other questions while she's pulling that up?
No, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Brandon?
No, I just want to be clear. The option A is the methodology that we used last year for the $167.8 million and the $72.2 million last year. Is that correct? So it's been used before?
Option A is our traditional workload formula, where the new funding coming in addresses the lowest group of courts, the first 50%, and then all of the courts for the second half of it. And so, Fran, do you want to confirm on what we used for those two pots of money?
Right. So the first number that you refer to is the restoration funding. That was put back to the courts exactly the way it was pulled out. So that didn't run through the normal workload formula methodology. However, it was taken out, it went back to those courts to fully restore them. And the second pot of money you identified was the $72 million, which was the inflationary money. That was distributed on a pro rata basis. And that is consistent with the recommendation for the $84 million in the 22-23 budget for additional CPI funding.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon.
Rebecca?
Okay, so, yes, go ahead,
Dick. I was going to just make a couple of observations. The one, first one, it relates specifically to the principles and I guess options for consideration. Those principles have been in place a number of years, and I certainly remember when we were putting those together, that at the time there wasn't a lot of new money coming into the branch. And so we wanted to make sure that we had some things that considered the impact to courts that would have a redistribution of their funding, their historic funding, you know, making sure that the impact to those courts was not going to be, you know, immediate perhaps, you know, with a court losing significant revenues as a part of the redistribution formula, et cetera. And I bring that point up, or those points up, only because I think today, the budget that we are facing today contains a lot of new opportunities for resources to come into the branch. And because of that, I think that we should be prepared to perhaps expand some of the principles because there are new opportunities that are before us. And, you know, as an example, the civil assessment revenues have been part of a court's budget for a number of years. And there are some business plans that have been established to some degree with at least a partial reliance on some of the monies, et cetera. And right now we're obviously looking at the potential of seeing CPI-based increases. We're looking at equity adjustments along the way that may not necessarily go through the 50% to the lowest to 50% to everybody. And so I just wanted to make sure that we reserve the option to perhaps expand some of those principles a little bit in light of the information that we have and understanding, of course, the information that we're getting in the budgetary process as well, which it has not landed. So I think I'm hoping that we can perhaps continue to look at the potential for expanding them as well as some of the options that have been presented. There may be more. So I just wanted to put those points out.
Thank you, David. I think, you know, one of the things we need to remember is that this formula has changed over time, and our priorities and our concerns and our to-do list has changed over time. And so to your point of, you know, our principles may need to expand, that may, very well may be, and that should definitely be something everybody feels the ability to address in these meetings. I will say that, you know, for our goals today, we want to make sure that we do get to a recommendation. And so, you know, to the extent that we can identify areas that we may have to revisit at a later time to modernize those approaches or something, that would be great. But, you know, I would caution against wholesale redevelopment with a week to go. So if that's you know, I delicately put, but frankly, David, you're right. And I know in these meetings, we've talked a number of times about the need to kind of refresh some of our ways of looking at some of these things. And so your comments are timely and appropriate. So let's see, I see Judge Siebert's hand up again, and then Brandon.
Thank you. I'm just curious, when I'm looking at the option A, item two, if somebody could explain to me the logic of the first step is to spend 50% of the funding on those that are below the state average. What is the logic of not using whatever money, 50%, 40%, 80%, to equalize the bringing all courts up to the statewide average funding ratio? Why is it 50% as opposed to saying we're going to use whatever it takes to equalize all the courts before we do anything else with the money?
So the formula approach, Judge, in the past was to address at least a portion of any new money to those courts that were below the average. And so this particular breakout of the formula is not specific to this particular pot of money. This is the approach we've taken in the past with new money and is our adopted approach. That being said, that doesn't mean we have to use that recommendation as our approach. We could do a pro rata approach based on need, based on allocation, or it could be based on bringing everybody up to a certain amount. And so that approach is definitely a possibility. This breakout of the whole section A is simply restating our methodology that we have used over the last several years with the funding methodology. Does that help?
Yes, it helps. Yeah, okay. No, you did. I'm sorry. I keep putting it on mute because I'm.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm in a place where it's got a lot of noise. So, but I guess what I'm asking is I appreciate that that's historically the way it's been done. But when we're looking at it in the context of this, essentially having to redo things because with relative to the civil assessment funds, what is the reason to not allocate it based on bringing everybody up to the same level? That's I'm wondering whether it's historically been done that way or not. What is the logic that people have used to essentially not bring everybody to the same level with these funds?
So I'm going to go out on a limb here and just kind of speak from my 30,000 foot view. In the past, every court needed some growth. And so the logic behind the splitting of it in the past was to continue to bring along those folks that needed growth at the very lowest level, the lowest half of the courts, and then give some growth opportunity to all courts as they were, you know, incurring inflation or, you know, regular operating expense growth. So that was the logic behind it in the past. So for today's option, it's just simply being offered up as this is one of our traditional methods. I don't think that there is necessarily an argument for A versus B versus C versus D. I think those are just being offered up as these are our historical approaches to things. And so certainly if one of these options doesn't have any logic behind it based on our where we are today, we can certainly drop it off.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Brandon? And then David?
No, I lowered my hand. I left it up from last.
Very good. Okay, David?
Yeah, this I just wanted to offer some assistance to Judge Siebert and then kick things off, let's say, thereafter. Remember, or you may not remember, that when we were facing the need to come up with a new funding distribution methodology, there were some courts that were very much below the statewide average. And the monies that became that were appropriated to the judicial branch did not have any goals specifically referenced in how the monies would be distributed. So internally, the Budget Advisory Committee wanted to try to help move courts closer together, closer to the statewide average. And one way to do that would be to take half of the money to help those below the average and then take all of the money and distribute to everybody because everybody needed to receive some growth in funding. But again, today we have other options that are addressing the disparities that may have existed historically. One is the equity funding that we have. One is the CPI. We didn't have any of that, those monies coming into the branch. And I think that was the reason for that. But again, it's just a point of reference. I think Rebecca had shared with us that these are just points of reference for consideration, but not necessarily things that we, you know, have to move with, but for consideration. So Rebecca, if you don't mind, what I wanted to try to do, because I just realized the hour that we're in at this point, and I know that you said that our objective is to try to come up with a solution to recommend to the full committee as well as the Judicial Council, JBBC as well. One of the things I wanted to try to bring forward for consideration is the notion that the MOE, the $48.3 million that has been identified as the MOE offset, and the description that Oksana shared, that that money has been placed in the trial court trust fund for the benefit of all trial courts. All 58 of us receive some monetary benefits through the distribution formula of that, and it's been in place for a number of years. And my hope is that we can identify that segment of dollars of what has been identified as a potential backfill to the branch separately from what it would be remaining from whatever it is that we receive related to the civil assessments. Because I think that seems to be one of the easier objectives to strike a consensus on, and then we can start moving, in my view, towards the remaining portion, which is substantially less than the potential $100 million that has been referenced from time to time in budgetary discussions. So I bring that forward as a talking point slash recommendation for consideration, but I defer to you if the timing is appropriate for me to do that.
It absolutely is. And so I don't know if, Brandy, you're looking to break these things up into separate motions, but I do think we could definitely make this our first recommendation, is that the $48.3 million is treated as it has been in the past with a backfill for that segment of money. Is there anybody who has concerns with that or would like to further discuss that? Okay, so that distills us down then to our retained civil assessments and what we do with that particular piece of it. And that will become recommendation number two. So anyone want to kick that one off?
Are you asking for a motion?
Actually, Judge Siebert just raised his hand. Let's see if there's some discussion. Judge Siebert?
Yeah, so just a point of a clarification or question maybe. Do we have any sense of use whatever number it is that, you know, of the two options? One was, I think you said $100 million. The other would be we collect $150 civil assessment and the state would give it $50 million, I think, with the numbers that were thrown around. I'm close anyway. Do we have any idea whether how much money it would take to bring all the courts up to the same funding percentage level? I know that there's some discrepancy between different courts, but is there enough money in the $100 million, as just use that as an example, to equalize that?
So I think I'm going to let Brandy answer that, but I would say that with the $100 million, just using that number as a round number, I think we definitely get all of the courts up into the 89-plus percentage of funding, keeping in mind there's already courts that are in the 90s and above. So, you know, if somebody's at 97%, for instance, it won't bring everybody to 97%. But Fran, do you want to weigh in on that? I saw your camera come on.
So actually, if we look at the combination of funding included in governor's budget, which is the $100 million for equity, plus the $84 million for CPI, plus the $32 million for new judgeships, when all of that money is included in the allocation, it takes every court up to a minimum of 89% funded.
Yeah, well, I guess my question is a little different than that. Not whether we can get everyone at 89%, but whether we can get, in other words, before we give the court that, and I don't know any of the courts what their numbers are, but you said somebody's at 97%, somebody's at 89%. What's the logic of not using this money to bring everybody that's below 97% up in a proportionate way so they're all closer to the 97, as opposed to doing only 50% of the money for that purpose and then 50% spread among all the courts?
So I would just start with saying that the equity funding that is in the governor's budget is intended to do just that. The civil assessment funding is not intended necessarily to be an equity funding mechanism. But, you know, I don't know if Zlatko, do you want to jump in here maybe and talk a little bit more about our equity funding and how that is more of the tool for that equalization?
Sure, more than happy to do that. Yeah, thank you, Rebecca. I mean, yeah, so the Judicial Council submitted a BCP looking to benefit those that were underfunded, those underfunded courts. We submitted a BCP, went through the budget. The budget included now $100 million, Judge. That is intended to do exactly what you're saying. It's to raise those courts that are the lowest funded courts as high as they possibly can with that $100 million. That's something that you've already, you and this committee recommended and is going before the council. So I think that in terms of what Rebecca's described, that equity and lifting up the bottom funded courts is something that this committee has already dealt with. And I think the options that are before you are within the sort of traditional workload formula pro rata approach that you're discussing now. But definitely equity has been an issue, and it's been something that I think in a big part with $100 million that you've already voted on addresses.
So just one last follow-up, and I won't keep monopolizing the time here. But I'm following the analysis. I remember we voted on the $100 million. I get that. But if we don't achieve equal funding percentages with that $100 million, I guess the question then becomes, why can't we use this money to enhance our effort to equalize the funding level on a percentage basis among all the courts, even if that, whether it was intended for that reason or not intended for that reason, if we have the discretion to use the money and or allocate the money in the way we feel is most appropriate, what is wrong with the idea of helping? If $100 million isn't enough to equalize it, then use this money to get it closer. What's the reason to not do that?
And I think, Judge Siever, what you're referring to is the closest can be described as perhaps number C's recommendation, and that is a proportional or a pro rata distribution based on the allocation. So what you're talking about is a court's allocation of where they actually are sitting as compared to their need today. And so I would offer up that perhaps what you're suggesting is an approach that more aligns with number C, which is a distribution based on where they are in the listing of things. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense to me. I wouldn't have recognized when reading C that that's what it means. But if that's what's consistent with what I'm saying, then that's what I'm asking is what it seems logical to me that that's a good way to do it. And I'm wondering, you know, I'm sure there are people who feel differently. I'd like to hear why we wouldn't do that.
And I will just say, I don't think we answered your earlier question about allocation versus formula. And so you know, I think that's probably why C maybe didn't pop out in the beginning, but allocation is really where a court is landing right now on the list. And their need is where they're projected, where they need to be, where they're striving to get to. And then the formula is simply the mechanism by which we get there. And so I would say that what you're describing is C. So we'll use that as a starting point for the conversation. You know, is there anybody who thinks that there should be a different approach to this? Judge Siebert's offered up C makes sense to him and to, you know, perhaps to the rest of us. And again, it is listed as a traditional way that we have distributed some funding. So are there any other comments or questions or offers up?
This is David. If I can jump in, I'd be happy to.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I think is important to recognize is a consideration that was provided in the materials that we received, and that is minimize volatility, maximize stability and predictability to the extent possible. And if we if we exclusively move to some sort of distribution, I think there is the potential for maximizing volatility to some of the courts that have been receiving the monies that they have in this area to sustain certain operational responsibilities that they have. And so I obviously support the notion that our effort should be to move all of the courts up in terms of bringing them closer to their funding need or workload funding need, I think there are still some pieces that perhaps we should kind of tease out a little bit further in light of the fact that we are getting two other or three other key sources of funding to help the branch, and that is the money for the new judges, the money to equalize equity to the degree that the money can take us there, but also in the CPI increases that we're expecting to see as well. Those dollar amounts far exceed, in my view, what would be in play to help us get us to that goal. So maybe we'll end up there in the end, but I think it would be helpful to perhaps talk about some of the other elements as well in light of the fact that volatility is a key area for us to recognize, as well as time for adjustment and adaptation. That was one of the two of the principles that we had identified.
So David, in light of your comments, do you have a solution for teasing that out, or are you looking for ideas from the group?
Okay, so the topic that I raised related specifically to the $48.3 million, which has been part of our budget, which has been part of the distribution to all of the courts using the funding formula. If your funding need, workload need goes up, then you run the benefit, if you will, of gaining more of a percentage of the dollars that go in. If it goes down, then of course your a court's budget would be adjusted accordingly based on the three-year average of workload, of course. So again, I think that a key component which benefits everybody is to look at the $48.3 million as the first recommended approach to distribute whatever money is made available relating to the civil assessment backfill.
So we have that noted as a first recommendation. Maybe I misunderstood. Do you have some recommendation on the retained earnings, which is the remainder of? Okay, so what is that?
So in my view, the retained civil assessments, we recognize that the retention of 100% of what we've received historically needs to be examined internally in terms of what we do going forward. And I would offer this. We have a funding methodology already that we can turn to distribute the money. And in my view, it seems that if we were to distribute it first, and this is perhaps in line with what Judge Siebert is suggesting, is that if we distribute that money first using the funding formula, it will actually place courts in different areas of their placement on the spectrum of, are they at the statewide average, above the average, below the average. And what that then does is it becomes the first distribution, if the Judicial Council approves it, of the funding. And then from that, take the equity funding potentially, which I think Fran just mentioned, it takes all of the courts to a little bit over 89%. This is additional money that would move everybody up because, you know, whatever, if it's $50 million that we end up having left as part of the backfill, it advances the starting point for the allocation of the equity funding for everybody. And I believe what would happen is using the formula, some courts are going to move above the statewide average with this money. And it may be that some courts will fall below the statewide average, but the equity funding, the $100 million that becomes part of what is available, would move all of those courts at least to a statewide average, which is higher than 89.3% in my view. And then from there, you have the CPI funding that becomes available to everybody using the funding formula in the same way. So we begin to start moving towards a standard funding formula rather than relying upon a distribution formula where some courts retain all of the civil assessments that are collected and some courts contributing a portion of their civil assessment to the maintenance of effort offset. This becomes part of the same calculation that applies to all of the courts in the same way. So that's my proposal, if that makes sense. And I'm happy to answer.
So if I understood you correctly, I believe you're reordering the distribution of funds. And I want to ask Zlatko and Fran and Brandy, I believe the distribution of the funding of equity, CPI, et cetera, has already gone to JBBC and been approved without civil assessments. So by definition, I think they are already calculated. Is that correct? Or am I mistaken on that?
That's correct, Rebecca.
Here's the only problem with that, Rebecca, is if that money has already been distributed, by incorporating on top of that the civil assessment backfill, you then move courts well above the statewide average, as opposed to what is intended with the equity funding, is that you keep people above the average and don't let them fall below. But by making the adjustment with the equity, by adding the CPI funding, making a calculation, and then giving additional money to courts, then we start moving people above the statewide average significantly more, or below the statewide average. And I think we should examine that. And we obviously didn't know what we had before us. If we make the distribution or recommend the distribution of the civil assessment, the retained portion first, using the funding formula, everybody will be where they are. And then the equity funding will ensure that everybody who's below the average would achieve a new level of funding statewide, the level of funding that's along the statewide average. I think if there's an opportunity to run a calculation along that line, it'll be a little clearer that what we were intended by equalizing with the equity funding may be altered if we do the distribution of the civil assessment backfill afterward.
So I, let's see, I guess I need Zlatko, you and Fran to kind of weigh in here as far as, I don't know that we can pull that back at this point. Now that may be something we want to take a look at in our future calculations. Zlatko, do you have a sense of where we are with this as far as maybe what our latitude is as far as reordering or calculating?
And hopefully we can settle on this particular issue, but I mean, I think you're grappling with the overall budget picture, of which, you know, this is one part. I think it does. I mean, the JBBC has another meeting to hear this issue. If there are issues, I think within the context of overall other allocations, there's that. But again, we've been looking for some level of sort of simplicity here and just dealing with this on the margin, but it's up to the committee as to what you'd like to do in that regard, but complicating it and it, you know, might be a challenge moving through this process, but we need to get to a place where we do have a recommendation coming out of the meeting today.
But so correct me if I'm wrong, but if we made the decision to reorder as proposed, we have to pull everything back and these are things that have already been approved that we'd be unapproving basically. And I'm not sure that we can do that at this point, David.
Understood, but I mean, just on the natural, if the 100 million comes in and the new average is, let's say, 90% for a court, actually all courts would be at 89 point whatever the percentage that Fran had mentioned. And picture, if you will, an additional $50 million gets distributed to a court based on their funding need. You're going to see courts go above 90% as a result of that, and it won't be distributed in an equitable way. Where the vast majority of the courts are at 90 or 89 point whatever, court is going to receive several million dollars, let's say, as part of the distribution of the backfill. You're going to create some disparities in it, especially because part of the funding need or the funded need incorporates some of the civil assessment monies that they had received. And that's part of the decision that this body made back in 2019, is that your funding that you receive considers civil assessment retention, the amount that is retained.
So let me just clarify what you just said with, I believe, with Fran, and then Judge Siebert has his hand up. Fran, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the calculations that went to TICBAC and JBBC, or maybe from TICBAC to JBBC, are absent the civil assessments. Is that right?
Correct, Rebecca.
So those are not actually calculated into where the courts are. Those numbers are not included in there, David. But let me pick up some questions and then we can circle back again. Judge Sieber and then Chad Finke.
Yeah, so I'm trying to follow everything David's saying, and he obviously understands this a lot more than I do, and I acknowledge that. But what I'm not hearing is any compelling reason, at least to me, as to why some courts who are already above the statewide average should get a piece of this money before the other courts are, equalized. I just don't, I'm not hearing the rationale for that. It seems to me that if there's money from civil assessments that we're going to allocate to people, it ought to be allocated to raise the boats that are below the ones that are higher. And I haven't heard any, I've been waiting to hear, but I haven't heard, at least in my mind, anything that is a compelling reason to not make sure that the courts that are have a lower percentage funding get a higher percentage before the other courts that are above them raise their percentage even higher. So that's where I'm at on it.
Thank you, Judge. Chad?
Thanks. Excuse me. Thanks, Rebecca. So I just want to ask a question. So looking at the materials, is it correct to say that our charge is to propose a new way of distributing civil assessment revenues, something other than the sort of dollar for dollar return? And that's sort of irrespective of what may or may not be in the budget. Is that right? I mean, that's sort of what we're trying to do here today, is if, whether there's a $50 million backfill, $100 million backfill, or no backfill, our charge is still to figure out something other than the current system whereby courts, you know, keep every dollar of civil assessments. Do I have that right?
Right.
So
yeah,
I think
we're looking at that policy issue.
So I don't know if this will answer Judge Siebert's question or not, and I don't know if anybody agrees with me. I think perhaps one reason then, you know, I think the dollar for dollar reimbursement, I mean, that has been the status quo for a long time. And sort of right, wrong, or otherwise, that's just what courts have gotten used to. And so I think to David's point about volatility, and I don't have any sense of where, all I know is where my court is. I don't know where all the other courts are. But I think that it strikes me that if the rule suddenly goes from you get back every dollar you collect to every dollar you collect only goes to courts under the average, that could present a pretty jarring transition, you know, sort of that volatility issue for some courts. And again, like I don't have any idea. I may be wrong. I don't know how it breaks out for all 58 courts. But I think, you know, given that the current sort of 50-50 split model is, as David said, is meant to, you know, it's meant to serve equity while also minimizing volatility. That strikes me as maybe, you know, I mean, maybe I'm just taking the easy solution, but that does seem to me to be a decent way to split the baby if we're gonna move away from the historical one-to-one model to something new. But I don't know. That may or may not be responsive, Judge.
So Chad, that your comments then reflect option A. Is that correct?
Frantically looking for unmute. Yes, that's correct. Sorry.
Okay. So, let's see.
Can I ask a question about that?
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah, go ahead.
Does anybody even know whether the option C, which is obviously what I'm proposing, really would, how many courts would be negatively affected by this, what people are referring to as a jarring adjustment? Is it really going to be a jarring adjustment for anyone? And if so, somebody describe for me how that jarring adjustment looks, if not for the whole system, at least your court. Because I couldn't tell you right now whether the court I'm at would benefit or be harmed by the suggestion that I'm making. And I'm glad I don't know, because then I know that I'm not thinking out of my own self-interest on this. But, you know, I'm hearing people say basically, hey, we're used to collecting, and let's just make up a number, and I'm making up completely a number, that we're used to collecting $10 million and getting $10 million. And maybe now we won't get any of that $10 million. I guess that's the jarring description, but is that a reality for any court?
So I think that, first of all, to your comments about you don't know the number and you're glad you don't know the number, that's why we do, you know, have these conversations on a policy level. What do we achieve to do with these approaches, you know? And certainly, you know, we all come from our courts, but we don't want to be necessarily swayed by a particular outcome. I think, too, we need to be reminded that we have a significant amount of money coming in from a number of other things as well. So there is, while, you know, a jarring movement, the $10 million you reference could be a reality for a court, because I think there are some courts that are collecting a number of dollars. There's a lot of money coming into the court. And so I don't know that we have anybody who's falling off a cliff anywhere. And I'm kind of anecdotally surmising that, and I guess I can be corrected by Brandy or by Fran on that. But anyway, I would just offer that up. And I think, David, did you raise your hand again?
I was gonna respond, but you had already responded that, in fact, let's just say for the sake of discussion, you have a court that's collecting civil assessment monies, and no portion of that is being applied towards an MOE. That is a jarring impact that the court would sustain if, in fact, all of it became part of a distribution to help those courts below the average. Remember,
but I thought you were. I'm sorry, David. I thought you were proposing, and I was agreeing with your proposal that the 48 million gets taken first, and then it's only the balance that we're talking about. And so, if the 48 is being distributed first, to take care of the MEO, whatever it is you guys are saying, MOE, then that takes that discussion off the table, doesn't it?
Well, no, because today, last year, the year before that, your court has been receiving a portion of that $48.3 million in civil assessments that courts have been collecting and contributing towards the MOE. So the whether it was known or not, all of the courts have been the recipient of what is the equivalent of $48.3 million in civil assessment, and it was distributed using the funding formula. So that's one of the reasons why I think separating those two, because essentially it's ongoing funding that we would end up seeing and would be sustaining the service levels that we have in all of the courts. The remainder, which is roughly $50 million, if in fact it comes in at $100 million in the backfill, my sense is, in light of what Rebecca mentioned and reminded us of, is that there are multiple sources of revenues for this budget year that we're facing to help strengthen our fiscal strength, our fiscal condition. And so the reason why I think the sequence in which the monies are allocated is important, it may not ultimately be timely at this point, but if equity is achieved with courts at a certain level with the equity funding of $100 million, and then of course you start seeing some of the CPI increases, you basically move folks differently, because if the funding formula, if I'll use Orange as an example, we're 7% of the state funding level. And so if $50 million becomes part of it, and we're equal, let's say, at 89.3%, and we get a certain amount out of the distribution, it moves everybody at a different place. And my hope is to try to keep us all at the same level first. Let the Judicial Council meet the objective that was set by the legislature of equity funding, moving all of the courts upward. You get to do that by following the distribution of the civil assessment monies first, and then following that with the new money, which is considered equity funding after that. So I think, and it's a little complicated, I would agree, but I think we may be moving in the same direction in terms of what it is that we're endeavoring to achieve by taking the civil assessment money and distributing or recommending it be distributed in that manner.
So I'm going to kind of call for a timeout here, I guess, for a second. And I think that I want to, you know, be mindful of the time. We definitely want to get to a proposal here. I think where we are so far is we have a recommendation that appears to be supported by the group that the 48.3 is addressed through the backfill as it has been. And then I hear two proposals that have, well, actually three proposals, two that are on our option list and one that is a third, and that is option A, option C, and then David's proposal that we reorder reorder the allocation and put civil assessments first. Frankly speaking, David, I'm not sure that we can achieve that because we have so much that has been approved by TICBAC and moved forward. So what I would ask you, I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, is do you have halfway point that you can offer up that would not require us to call everything back from our recommendations to JBBC? And so with that, what I'm suggesting is that not necessarily that this is a closed issue, but we do have a time frame that we need to meet in order to get the funding out to the courts and to get the recommendation before the council. And we also have a mechanism in place for this committee and TICVAC to continue to tweak the system and change the process. So what I would ask is, would you like to offer up something in alternative, or would you like to pursue your proposal?
So I think the original proposal does, is that to me, Rebecca? I'm sorry.
Yes, that was to you.
Okay. I think that the original proposal, if we take a look at it, it may be substantial enough for it to be reassessed. But I'll defer to the team from the JCC to make that assessment. In the alternative, if in fact, we move forward with the 48 as proposed, and we take the remainder, and our objective is to try to equalize a certain level of funding below which nobody will go, then we should be able to achieve that. Because the underlying objective that I really had is to elevate the funding, base funding level, the statewide average in which courts are funded, to not be just at 89.3% or whatever the number is, but perhaps at 90.5 or 91%. So the statewide average becomes increased by the backfill of civil assessment. So I think that it addresses a couple things. It acknowledges the importance and objective that we have always had, and that is to increase the statewide average of funding for all of the courts. I think that's in alignment with what Judge Siebert may be supporting, and this does that as long as whatever the calculation is, that it doesn't cause any court to go below the statewide average, because some courts are going to receive a certain portion of the $50 million, if that's what's remaining, in larger chunks, if you will, than perhaps others are, because of the gap that they're facing. So as long as we can build in a principle that no court is going to fall below the average with this new money, and the objective being that we increase the statewide base average to a higher level. And I don't know what that number is, but I think it meets kind of what everybody's intention is. And that's what I don't want us to do. I didn't want any court to fall below a certain percentage as a result of the timing in which the allocation was applied in their funding formula. So I said a lot.
Let me see if I can repeat back what I think your recommendation is, and then I can compare it to Chad's and Judge Siebert's, and we can see if we have a proposal. What I thought I heard you say is that the retained civil assessments would be applied to the lowest courts in order to bring up the statewide average, as long as no court who is already above the statewide average drops below.
Correct. And the other piece is that it's not individual. The objective isn't individuals as it is collective. So all of the courts end up increasing their base percentage with that money. If it's 0.1% or 0.5%, the base funding level will be the same. The lowest funding level will be the same. So it's going to require some calculation of that money and recalculation of that money. And there is one piece that I think is really important that I wanted to mention here, if I may. So part of the obligations that have been established for the civil assessments that have been collected by different courts have been impacted greatly by the changes in what's going on with civil assessment collections. I mean, it's happening. And I wonder if there is a consideration or an opportunity to use a portion of that which we've identified as retained civil assessments to fulfill any capital project obligations that have been tied to civil assessments that courts collect, because that ensures that those obligations will forever be met as a result of this proposal that is under consideration by the legislature and the governor. So those are the two adjustments that I would recommend.
Can I just ask one? This is Jeff Siebert again. But let me just ask, under the one proposal from the governor, under one proposal from the legislature, there will be no civil assessments, period. Which means that the infrastructure that was set up to collect those civil assessments becomes unnecessary, correct?
Which is exactly why we have to look at this without focusing on dollars. It has to be a policy approach. So for instance, if we say any dollar collected is distributed equally across the courts, I'm making this up, but as an example, that's a policy. And if it means we collect a dollar, it's distributed equally. If it means we collect $10, it's distributed equally. If we collect $0, it's distributed equally. So that's why the policy issue on this is so important, because the fact is that the whatever's being discussed right now, whatever ends up in the budget, 5 years from now, can't be the driver for this particular decision. And so to the details of all three discussions, we cannot propose it based on what we think the dollars might be or what the discussions are today, because that's not necessarily where we're going to be tomorrow. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And to that point, one of the things that David raised several times during this discussion, and I appreciate him, raising it, is, hey, Siebert, you sound like you're trying to create an equity fund with this $50 million, but we've already got the $100 million for that purpose. But in my view, since we've been talking about this as a policy independent of this particular budget, that discussion about what we've already got for equity of the $100 million really is not an appropriate item for discussion, in the sense that next year it may not be that, or in the future years it may not. And we're looking at a policy about these funds that we're getting, and call them the civil assessment funds, but it's $100 million or it's $50 million, whatever the number it turns out to be. It really is something that is ongoing, as opposed to the $100 million item for the equity. So I think the policy we decide should not be conflated with the issue of, what other steps the governor's office or the legislature has created for creating equity in the courts.
So basically you're reiterating your point on allocating the funding proportionately to the workload allocation.
That's right. That's right. And when I look at the item 2 under A, it seems like, at least if I'm reading it right, 50% would go to bringing the courts up to the statewide average. But then the other 50% would be distributed in a different way, which in effect, doesn't it change the statewide average again?
Yes, it does. It does.
So, and what I'm proposing is, rather than try to get courts up to the statewide average and then creating a new disparity in the statewide average, bring the courts up to as close as we can to the same level percentage-wise as we can, using this money. It obviously won't make everybody equal, but it doesn't seem to make sense to me to, if somebody's at 95, to make them 96, and somebody's at 89 to make them 90. It should be making the 89 closer to 91 than the other person getting additional. That's why I'm in favor of item C, and that's what I would propose.
And I should be very clear with item C. It does not necessarily mean that somebody who is at the higher level of funding will get zero. It just means they would get a smaller proportion.
I understand based that.
Okay. Neil, you had your hand up.
Yes. I mean, after thinking about this and trying to figure out David's proposal, It would seem to me that if we've already applied the equity funding and everybody's up to this 89 point something percent, we're at, everybody's at an average or at least at that average. So I don't think that A would be the appropriate option to adopt here. But if you were to look at David's thinking, if you were to look at the retained civil assessment earnings and try to use that as a basis for trying to backfill, then you might have different, you might have a different average. And then if you tried to redo the allocations based upon that, then you might want to use A. But I think you, I don't think A is appropriate at this point because everybody's at a statewide average. That's why I think C would be, probably be the better choice.
Is that a motion, Neil?
Sure, I'll put it out there.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, so we have a proposal for a allocation funding proportionately via workload formula allocations proposed by Neil, seconded by Judge Siebert. Now, Neil, would that be to include the 48.3 to be treated as it has been as our first recommendation of the motion, or is that a standalone?
Yes, I understand that. Yes, you treat 48.3 as it has been.
So that's a friendly amendment, or that's yes. And Judge Siebert, is that your understanding?
I'll second. Yeah, it was my understanding as well. Thank you.
Okay, further discussion.
Yes. So Rebecca, this is David. I'm gonna vote no on this item, because using that description, a court that is at 96% of their funding need, okay, they potentially, using that formula, would get more money. So what my original proposal was to use the funding formula such that it increases the statewide average further. So in reality, some courts may not get any money from this backfill because they're much higher than the statewide average. And if you were to take that, use that money with the intention of increasing the statewide average, it accelerates courts to get closer to the 100% funding need that the workload formula has been calculated at. So I'm going to vote no on the this particular approach, because my goal is really to increase the statewide average rather than just distributing it to everybody based on their funding need.
Just a clarification, David, it's on their funding allocation, not their funding need. C is based on allocation.
Right. So the funding allocation means that everybody gets a portion of the $50 million. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Right. And my objective was to increase the average, move everybody's average higher. And however much money it takes to boost it 1%, or 0.5%, it's all going to be used to boost the state, whatever. So that is my the reason for my objection. Or
gotcha.
So just this Back is Judge Siebert again. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Judge Siebert.
Yeah. So I just said C because you told me that's what I was saying. but just to be clear, what I'm proposing is that those that everybody gets some money except for the people who are higher than everyone else. In other words, if somebody's at 97% and somebody's at 89%, the 97% person doesn't get any of the money because nobody's caught up to them yet. That's what I'm trying to equalize, moving the people who are at the bottom higher, not the people at the top higher. So if David is correct, that it just means that the one who gets that 97 now goes to 98, and the one who was 89 goes to 90. I'm not in favor of that. I'm talking about the guy who's at 89% goes to 91%, and the guy at 97% doesn't get any of the money.
Okay, so that is something different. So are you, you'd like to withdraw your second?
Yes.
Okay, Kevin, do I hear your voice out there?
I'm sorry, group. Yes, I'm on the phone, and I was, if there's a withdrawn motion, then that was now going to change my comment, but I was prepared to vote no against moving C forward. But I don't know if that's necessary comment at this point, other than I think that, you know, we're looking at the issue before us today, and then next year, you know, how we handle this funding or this particular issue going forward on a policy level is important, and that's why the straightforward, simplicity, and not to go the lazy route, as Chad said earlier, I would be more supportive of option A, which runs it through the standard formula, as we've already previously put new dollars into. I'll leave it at that due to my sound quality. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. So I have Chad's hand up, but we now have Neil's motion for C. And Chad, do you want to go ahead and make your comment, and then I'll see if there's a second for Neil's motion, or if we need to start over?
You know what? I'll let you, since we do have a pending motion, Rebecca, I'll my comment may become moot, so I'll okay. Hold it for now.
Okay, so Judge Siebert has pulled back his second for option C. Is there anybody who wants to second the motion for option C? Okay, so that motion is going to die for lack of a second. So Chad, do you have a comment then?
Well, I guess Kevin and I are now calling the lazy option, which I don't really like, but I guess I would make a motion to go with option A, which is to say, or option 1A, I'm sorry, I lost the materials in front of me.
A is the workload.
Well, allocate via the workload. So again, my thinking is if what we're talking about is adopting something different from the status quo, which is dollar for dollar, you know, return to the courts, I remain of the opinion that the workload formula is the best way to do that. And I say that, and again, without having any kind of analysis of the courts in front of us, but if we do have a court like Judge Siebert said, that's at 97%, and if that court is also a high collector, I worry that it could be very difficult for that court, if it is accustomed to high collections, to suddenly say, well, you're at 97, so all those collections you bring in, you're not going to get any of it. You know, that's going from 60 to zero in 2 seconds. And I think the workload formula better steps that down. So I would make a motion to go with option A, and I would have the, I don't know which is the cart and which is the horse, but with the understanding that if there is backfill, that the MOE would be taken care of initially out of whatever backfill.
Brandon will second.
Okay, so we have Finke with A with the backfill on the MOEs. We have Riley seconding that. And then a question for you, Chad. When you say the MOEs, are you referring to David's comments about all obligations or just MOEs?
I'm sorry. I will all obligations.
Okay, and so then
I apologize for using MOE as shorthand.
No, that's fine. Brandon, is that your understanding for your second?
It is.
Okay, so then I have Judge Kelly, your hand is up, and then Judge Siebert, you're after that.
I raised my hand because as Chad was beginning to make the motion, I was hoping to second. I agree with his comments. In my experience on the committee, this is the best formula that has met the issues of raising up from the lower, those that are further away from the average funding loop. You know, it's gone from the mid 70s, now we're looking at close to 90. So I think that this formula works, and I think that it has been successful in the past. And so that was why I was raising my hand, but Mr. Riley beat me to it once again. And thank you very much.
And I did that for the same reasons. I think it's consistent and it's tried and true. So that's why I support it.
Okay. And Judge Siebert, you had a comment?
Yeah. So now that we're focused on option A, my question is this. It says that it will allocate up to 50% to bring the funding up to the statewide average. Why 50%? Why not bring it, the funding should be allocated up to whatever percentage to bring all courts up to the statewide average. If that was the case, I would be fine with this proposal. But I don't see why we would be giving money to other courts until we get all of the courts up to the statewide average. And it sounds like with this proposal, it's possible that the 50% won't be enough to get everybody up to the statewide average. I don't know that, and maybe it's the 100 million that takes care of that. It's a whole different issue. But I don't like the idea of having a proposal that says we're only going to use up to 50% of the funding as opposed to whatever the percentage is that's necessary to get it to all the courts of the statewide average. And that's my objection to item A as it sits right now.
Thank you. And again, that the 50% is a historical formula. Certainly your thoughts could be proposed as another option if this motion fails. So are there any other comments or questions or anything on this proposal?
Shockingly, Rebecca, I have something to add. Now, I want everybody to recognize the fact that today, the funding that a court is budgeted at includes whatever the civil assessment retained amount happens to be. Okay? So if a court is at 96%, some portion of that could be civil assessment dollars that they're retaining. If we're moving that off the table, if retained civil assessment is not going to go dollar for dollar to a court that collects it, some courts are going to fall by a significant amount. So that's why my intent was to ensure that the funding distribution of the retained civil assessment amount be targeted at increasing the statewide average amount at the same time. And it could be, like I say, 0.1%, or it could be 1%. We don't know how far that money is going to take us to adjust that base funding level, as opposed to just sending it through the funding formula. And you just said it yourself, Rebecca, 50% is a reference to what we've had historically there. And that's why I think that we may have to come up. I'm having difficulty supporting this because it's going to move people in ways that we did not intend. And that's why, you know, if we were to continue to look at increasing the statewide average with this money, those that need to be increased will get a little bit of the money, and those that are above that statewide average may not receive, what they had previously anticipated. So that's where I'm having some struggles.
Thank you, David. Just for clarity, so just again to reiterate, the numbers that have gone forward from TICBAC to JBBC did not have the civil assessment calculation in there. And then also the funding formula does move the statewide average from wherever the calculation point is. And so I just want to clarify those two points. And so with that, we have a motion on the table. And so it is time to vote. All those in favor of the motion, and I'm going to restate it, and please correct me if I don't have this right. David, did you have something?
No, I was going to ask you to restate the motion.
Okay, I'm going to restate it. Okay, so the motion is this, as I understand it, is one, that the 48.3 will be treated as it has been in the past with backfill, as well as any other civil assessment obligations. And two, the retained earnings will be distributed through the workload formula methodology as outlined in option A of the presentation. Have that correct, Chad? Chad, do I have that correct?
You hear me?
No. Oh, now I do. Okay.
Did I have that correct? Sorry.
Okay, yes. Brandon, that was your understanding as well?
It is.
Okay, all those in favor?
Is that a single or separate motions? I mean, is action
one,
item?
They're one motion.
And Rebecca, this is Brandy. Can we please confirm then it would also be calculated last after all of the other new funding has already been calculated?
Chad, is that an amendment you're willing to?
So my motion was not contemplating any change in the order. I don't remember that being a part of the materials, so I wasn't intending to make any change in the order in which things are calculated.
So
I don't know if that helps, Brandy.
Yes.
Okay.
Brandon, is that your understanding as well?
It is.
Okay, so this is a single motion. It's been restated. Are there any questions as to what the motion is? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 All those opposed?
I'm opposed.
I'm opposed.
Okay. Any abstentions? Okay, motion carries.
Hi, Rebecca. Not to interrupt, just can I confirm, was that Judge Siebert and Mr. Yamasaki in opposition?
Yes, yes it yes. was. And so I just want to reiterate for the group that, you know, as with everything we do here, you know, we continually tweak our system to make it better and to make it more applicable to the time period that we're in and as our environment changes. And so I would encourage the group to continue to take a look at these areas that you're uncomfortable with and that you think don't fit just exactly right. And let's start looking at them for next fiscal year. And we do have, you know, not only an ARP program where we can address an individual calculation that affects a court or several courts, but also an entire process. And we do have these items that, you know, on our work plan. And so we can continue to talk about them. Certainly, you know, this is going to go to TIC back. It's going to have another look at it. But, you know, this is definitely going to move the conversation forward, and I encourage you to, you know, continue to bring forward your thoughts and your ideas, and we will do the same. So with that, please note that we will be planning an additional FMS meeting as needed this summer and after the enactment of the budget to develop methodologies related to AB 177 and the court reporter funding. And certainly we may need to adjust our work plan as well, Brandy, if depending on where everything lands with this allocation process and the new budget. And so stay tuned for that as well. Are there any last minute questions, comments from anybody?
Only to say, Rebecca, nicely done.
Thank you, David. I do want to say, you know, this group, you know, we get all the real sticky wickets here. You know, these are not easy conversations. And, you know, for years now, we have been trying to really kind of make sense of some things that don't always make sense to us. And so I will say, you know, great job, everybody, not easy decisions. And more work to be done, but we have met our responsibility for today. Thank you very much. We are moving this forward to TIC back. Brandy, Fran, Zlatko, any last minute needs from us before we close this meeting?
This is Brandy. Nothing on my end. Thank you.
Nothing. Thank you very much.
Zlatko?
Nope. Appreciate the conversation.
Okay, great. Well, I want to thank staff for all that they have done for us today. And Cottrell, are you all good to go as well?
I am, thank you.
Very good. Thank you all again, and we will see you next time, and we will see you at the TICVAC meeting. So this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Yeah.